Hello and welcome to another episode of The Meaning of Life and Such. I'm your host, Haya Kamps, and I try to chip away at the question of who we are, why we're all here, and what it all means. If that sounds a little bit vague, then, well, you try coming up with a better description of what this is all about. Notes on a postcard, please. In any case, here's our new deep dive into life, the universe, and everything. Let's roll tape. Scott, I know I've just been calling you Scott, so it's silly to ask you again, but what's your name, what pronouns do you use, and where in the world are you?
Scott Wyden-Kivowitz. I am he, him. So I am in New Jersey in the United States.
Nice. Yeah, I'm in California, so I'm kind of legally obliged to ask people about pronouns. We were just, before we started recording, we're talking about it's been a hot minute since we've spoken, and that's an utter tragedy, but it turns out, you know, life gets lifey. But I want to kick this off with how, like, what is your memory of us meeting and what was your first memory of that?
Yeah. So it's interesting. We talked virtually first for a while. I think we met in person, I'm going to say once or twice.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It was probably at Photo Plus Expo in New York City.
At the godforsaken hellhole that is the Javits Center, yes.
Yep. But I think we met probably because I was working years and years and years ago. This is when your, you know, like photography blog was like the one of the go-to, you know.
Photocritic back in the early noughts was like, was a thing. It was a real thing.
Yeah. And I was at the time was working at had a local camera store in New Jersey that actually happened to have one of the largest international extended warranty companies as attached. They have this local camera store as like a way for local New York and New Jersey people to come drop off their equipment locally, right? But they were not on social media. They had no website really. They had a website, but it wasn't a website. No email marketing. So I self-taught myself all this stuff, and in process getting really into social media, you know, as Twitter was more new, you know, was newer, and things like that. And I'm pretty sure we met virtually through that, through just communicating on socials, mainly with what you were doing with the photo site. But then you created Trigger Trap, and I think that's where our relationship grew. At that point, because I was like, "Ooh, I need this thing," and we started talking. And since then, there's been a ton of devices that do what you originally created. And even now, camera manufacturers have even taken some of what you've done and put it into the camera. So, you know, that speaks volumes for what you did many, many years ago. But we partnered at, you know, I was one of your partner photographers for Trigger Trap, and we, you know, became friends from that.
So, yeah. No, that's amazing. It's so wonderful to think back at all the things that have happened since then. It's like, it's been a long journey for the both of us, I think. You have had 7 or 8 careers since then, I think.
so my career, I have to say, all stemmed from a couple things. One is that I originally wanted to get into music and music recording. Specifically, I wanted to own a recording studio and record bands for a living. I went to college, to a prestigious music college, for that. Eventually, due to a variety of things, I shifted and went into photography. But that alone paved the road for where I am now. And so the meaning of life, right? This is what we're talking about. I think every single thing you do in your life has some sort of impact on the rest of your life, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I was at this camera store, as I mentioned, they had no marketing really in place besides your typical local marketing that every mom and pop camera store had, sending out flyers to everybody in town and stuff like that.
Yeah, putting out a sandwich board outside, that kind of thing.
Yeah. They had no presence online besides from their stores that were selling their warranty. Right, we're promoting their brand in that way, but that was it. So I took it into my own actions to create this marketing activities for them, doing events, doing photo walks and stuff like that, and growing this community around the store and around the warranty company. And then eventually I knew it was time for me to leave after 6 years there.
Right.
I left the photography industry for a little bit, went into IT security.
Brief escape.
It was a mistake. I mean, I learned a lot about myself through that year and change that I worked there, but I completely hated just the idea of having to sell. Like, I'm not a salesperson. So I was not a salesperson. I was marketing for them, but still there's that overlap. And I just hated the idea that I had to sell IT security. And so I left. I actually got hired by a company who made WordPress themes and plugins for photographers. And my job there was a little bit of a Swiss Army knife. Social media, blogging, email marketing. I worked there for 10 years. And then I knew I wanted to leave. This is where we had our last talk, was around this point when I
that
decided
about right, yeah.
it was time for me to leave. And everything happens for a reason. I got recruited to where I am now by one of our co-founders at Imagine. And so we do AI post-production right now. We're expanding, but right now we're doing AI post-production for photographers, AI culling, AI editing, things like that. And my job there is shifting now. When I was originally hired, I was employee number 6. And I was hired as, again, like a Swiss Army knife until we grew, to do basically all the content marketing, the podcast, the live streams, everything, the blogging, email marketing. Now we're over 50 employees. We're growing massively. And so now my job has been fine-tuned to just community growth, community management,
yeah,
podcasting, and live streaming. And it's nice to breathe a little bit. But again, full circle comes back to what I love doing, which is interacting with the photography community as a photographer myself, and then recording these incredibly educational pieces of content for the podcast, and doing these live streams that are fun and engaging as well, where you can actually see the person face to face and answer live questions and stuff like that. So
yeah, well, it's interesting actually. I have a number of friends who seem to come to me when they're about to do career transitions, and it's like, hey, what do you think of this thing that I'm thinking of doing?
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I'm just the kind of person who asks difficult questions, but.
Well, I think you also have this mind, you have this, not only a creative mind, but you have an entrepreneurial mind, which quite often are not, you know, visible in a solo person, right?
Right.
And I think you have gone through trials of product ideas that did well, failed, did well, failed, you know, like you've gone through things. So I think coming to you for advice as somebody who's gone through a lot of stuff, it makes sense. It makes sense. Plus you're the type of person who you like helping people.
I do. You mentioned in this introduction piece that there's a few moments in your life where you're like, I feel like I need to leave, or I feel like this isn't right for me.
Yeah.
And I think that is actually a very gentle step towards kind of a meaning of life adjacent question, which is like, how does that show up for you when you know you're in the wrong place?
Okay. Well, I'll start closer and I'll work backwards, because it was three careers. One is the IT security one. It was such a short stint. I'll call it a job, because I wasn't sure if it was going to be something. But the last job I was at, which was the WordPress company, I, for 10 years, lived and breathed photography websites. When I was in college, I wound up getting a major a degree in photography technology. So I had to work in the darkroom. I had to work in Photoshop. One of my final projects was to build a photography website, and we were told to do it in Photoshop. And I said, screw that. I'm going to do my own thing. And I actually learned WordPress version 1. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How long ago that was. And I built my photography website in WordPress instead of using what is it called in Photoshop?
The slicing.
Slicing, that's what it was. And I'm like, no way am I doing that in Photoshop. That's ridiculous. So I was living and breathing WordPress for a long time before I got that job, but spent 10 years. So that was that one. The IT security one was very simple. I just didn't enjoy it.
Right.
Like, if you don't enjoy what you're doing, look somewhere else, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's the beautiful thing about having like the options, right? I get that people get stuck in jobs because, you know, like I have one friend who is stuck in a job that is slightly overpaid for where he honestly should be. And he knows it. So he knows he can't move anywhere else. He hates the job, but also has a mortgage and obligations and stuff. And so he feels awfully trapped. And my heart goes out to him because I'm like, you know, he has to choose whether to change his lifestyle, maybe move or suck it up or like upskill and get a job that is like something he enjoys.
Yeah.
But he's finding himself in a place where he may have to, you know, kind of start a few rungs lower to kind of do a career change. And that's scary. And I feel like there's a beautiful, like whenever I find myself in that position, I don't realize I actually have options. Mm. I just breathe a sigh of relief because it's actually it's a wonderful thing to be able to be grateful for.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I thought I was just complaining to family.
Mm-hmm.
Near the end of that, of my career with the, for those 10 years. And at one point, multiple family members actually said, like, I think it's time for you to update your resume. Like, you're not happy.
Right.
Like, they could tell that, I mean, I was getting to more arguments, not just at work, but like more arguments with family, mm-hmm. with my wife. Like, it was actually impacting my life. I was shorter temper with my kids. Like, it was literally impacting my day-to-day, my mental health, and in probably in many cases my physical health, because that, you know, overlaps
totally.
And so it was because of them that I started to really, like, you know, sit down, update the resume, talk to people, see if I can, you know, find connections that can help. That's when we had a call. And yeah, I mean, you feel it. You feel it in your bones when it's time, when it's time. And hopefully if you have a support system, they also see it in you, like they saw for me.
And the people who love you the most and who know you the most can actually very gently go, hey, maybe look at this.
Yeah.
Which is really helpful.
Yeah.
So far in this conversation, we've mostly talked about work, which is curious because, I mean, that's probably not the meaning of life. I mean, right. we have mostly connected as photography nerds, even when, before we hit record, I think like 90% of the conversation were like, what's your lighting? What's the camera? What's the, what recording equipment are you using? Yeah. It's a really easy, like, I love nerding out about stuff like that with people and with you in particular, because I know we have, you know, different approaches, but very similar kind of views on what the ultimate outcome is.
Yeah.
And it turns out life is just about more. Do you have a feeling for what, like, your guiding, like, what guides you? How do you know what to prioritize?
Oh, boy. Well, I have a wife and two kids. So for me right now, 100% of my priority is making sure that we are comfortable. Like, mm-hmm. we have a nice house. We have two cars, which I know is a very fortunate thing. You know, we don't have to worry about how does one person get, you know, how do we get the kids here if we have to do this and so on. We have family around. So we're very fortunate. But before I had kids, priority was myself. Like, I didn't, mm-hmm. it was just, I want to be happy with where I am. I want to be successful. I want to have money. I want to travel. I want to do all these things. Now, like, I would love to have more savings. I would love to travel more, but we have, you know, my wife has her job. My wife's a teacher. I have my job, which does give me the ability to travel for work sometimes. My kids are in school. Like, so my priority right now is kids, family.
Mm-hmm.
that's going to be different for everybody. For me, that's what it is.
So it sounds like there was a shift at some point from pre-kids to post-kids.
Yeah.
Did that take you by surprise? Or were you like, actually, this is, I know I'm about to shift gears?
Yeah. I didn't really, so originally I didn't want kids. My wife really wanted kids. She wanted three. We have two. And we could talk about why in a little bit. But so when I knew I wanted to marry my wife, I knew that meant I'm going to have kids.
So, well, at least you had that conversation before you got married.
We did. I mean, we were dating, right? Mm-hmm. And when we got closer, we were dated for a while, and we got closer to like, okay, is marriage something that I would consider, or should I leave this relationship? I knew I wanted to marry her. And I knew around the same time frame that she wanted three kids. She would have 100 kids if she could, but mm-hmm. obviously that would be painful. So, I mean, that was like the shift of, okay, I know I'm gonna have kids. I know life's gonna change. So when my, before my daughter was born, and my daughter's now 8, before my daughter was born, and when my daughter was like a year, even like before a year, a little bit, my wife was okay with me going on photo trips with friends and just traveling and doing whatever. These days it's a little more difficult, but I did have to shift, and I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. You know, just have to adapt. It's okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you're now saying that your family is your full priority. Like, what does that look like in practice? Like, how do you, like, what is the joy in that for you? How does that give you spark and joy? I saw your eyes kind of glittered for a moment when you said that. And I was like, that's beautiful. That's good.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, they say that everything changes when you're a parent, that, mm-hmm. You know, just, it's true. It really is true. So when my daughter was born, of course, everything changes. I fell in love with her immediately. The funny thing is though that once your child starts talking to you and like has this individual personality and becomes his or her own thing, you know, like that is when you want to do everything you can to see that glitter in your child's eyes, right? Mm. So when I can do something to ensure that my daughter and my son are happy and smiling and, you know, having a blast, it means everything, right? So, you know, whether it's my daughter just had her first ever dance recital on a stage at a high school, a large high school, mind you, with mm-hmm. probably about 600 people in the audience. I know she gets stage fright, so thankfully the lights were dim on all the seats. Mm-hmm. But you know, she was so excited about it, and that's what makes me happy. You know, my son, his thing, he's gonna be 5 soon. His thing is dinosaurs and trucks, mostly dinosaurs these days. Mm-hmm. And if I can get him a new dinosaur toy that he's never seen or had before, it makes his day. And if it means spending $20 on a dinosaur toy that is way overpriced, I'll do it just because I know it'll make him happy. So that.
Yeah. And before we got online, I mean, you can't see this because it's an audio podcast, but Scott has this massive space behind him, which is turning into a dance studio for his daughter.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, much. I mean, that's like dinosaur toys on one side, like changing your entire living space to make space for hobbies. Yep. I think, I mean, that sounds an awful lot like love, my friend.
It sure does.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Do you sense that, do you have a feeling that purpose, like your purpose in life, is tied to these two tiny humans?
I think it's twofold. Mm-hmm. And I think I've come to recognize that over the past couple years. One, definitely like making sure my kids are happy and successful in their own lives, right? just like my parents and my in-laws are doing that for my wife and I, right? They're making sure that they can help us to get where we need to in our own lives. You know, we're still kids, even in our 40s.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, I think one of my purposes in life is to empower photographers.
Mm.
And I know that's like, is that really important for one person to say when something like family is there, right? I don't think it's as important as family, but I think my journey in life has brought me to that realization that I am definitely here on this planet to empower photographers, whether it's giving them a stage to talk about whatever they need to, whether it's me teaching them about something. I think that's part of my reason for being here.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I definitely had that as one of my major drivers for a long time. I mean, I have 20-ish books I wrote about photography right behind me. And, right. You know, there was the photography company, and then there was the blog, and then there was all the other stuff I've been doing. And at some point, I was in a workshop, and somebody like asked us to lay down, close our eyes, and imagine our gravestone. And they were like, what does that gravestone say? And of course, a lot of people were like, oh, what are we doing, guys? This is kind of an intense exercise. And what I landed on was learn and teach. Mm-hmm. I love learning new stuff, but I feel like I am not at a place where I'm happy that I've learned enough until I'm good enough to teach it. And I think I am there at the photography level now. And once I fully got there, like about 18 books in, I was like, this is boring to me now, right? I know everything I want to know about photography. I'm able to create every photo I want to. And, you know, I love doing things that scale. And at some point I realized, you know, teaching photography in workshops or one-to-one doesn't really scale that well. Books scale, but, you know, books is not really the best way to learn about photography. And I could never really get into the YouTubing, which I think is actually a really good way to teach as well. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I kind of did the leap from photography to entrepreneurship with Trigger Trap. And then I kind of stayed in entrepreneurship. And now, you know, my current career is pitch coaching. So I'm helping startups raise money from VCs and all that kind of thing. But to me, there's like a very easy transition from finding mastery in photography to finding mastery elsewhere. You know, I ended up working at a VC firm. I started a whole bunch of companies and then ended up in this level of mastery. And now I'm finding joy here. And I'm also 99% sure that this won't be my last career, right? At some point I will be like, okay, I've recorded all the video courses. I've written all the books. I've written all the articles. I think I've now written more than 100 articles on TechCrunch about various aspects of pitching and raising money and all that kind of stuff. And eventually I'll be like, I'm brainstorming here, but there isn't any more articles I can write. Everything I know exists out in the world. Right. I can still do coaching, but... And so I find myself, and I think actually this speaks to why I wanted to do this podcast in the first place. Mm-hmm. I find myself realizing that I'm very reactive in how I live my life. An opportunity shows up. I'm like, oh, that seems interesting. And I go and run after that for a while, like a dog chasing a squirrel. And then eventually you catch the squirrel gets away, and you're like, oh, now what kind of thing? It feels like you have a much more directional approach. Like it feels like you have something that guides you, or maybe I'm just completely making that up. Can you say something about that?
I don't know. I mean, like talking like work, for example, I felt that it was time. I knew it was time for me to leave, and the opportunity sort of came into my lap indirectly. I was for a time focusing heavily on teaching through YouTube to earn money through content because my wife and I had to adopt. We decided we could not do a natural childbirth for our second child. And adoption in the US is ridiculously expensive with legal fees and stuff like that. And so, it was actually because of that Imagine found me.
Hmm.
It was because of the content I was doing on YouTube and on my blog that Imagine found me. So in a way, yes, it's me putting things out there to the world of like, here's what I want to do with my life. You know, but at the same time, it wasn't me like, hey, Imagine's looking for somebody to work for them, you know, because I didn't know they existed
right
at the time.
Right.
And so I think it's a combination of just like, if you know where, what you want to do, as far as whether it's work, whether it's life, whether it, whatever it is, if you, even if you don't consciously know what you want to do, but subconsciously, like, you're doing things in your life,
right,
for some reason, because you enjoy it, putting it out in the world is going to come back and, you know, it's going to pay off in some way.
Yeah. One friend put it to me as if, you know, there's two modes of walking the world. One is, you know, you keep to yourself, you do your thing. So the other one is doing exactly the same thing, but walking around with a lightning rod, right? Eventually the right thing finds you, yep, because you're there going, hey.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to that, right? I feel like there are people who seem luckier than others, but when you look closely, it's not necessarily luck, right? They are also loading the dice. They're throwing the dice more often. You know, eventually you'll get the dice roll you need to, for the right things to happen, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And of course there's aspects of, you know, education and privilege and all that kind of stuff in there. But I also think there's a, are you able to have that level of availability to the, for luck to strike, kind of thing.
Time these days, for example, like if I wanted to do more YouTube content, it's a lot harder. Like there, mm-hmm, was a point where I was putting out 2 to 3 videos a week. And now, like, I've got, I mean, you can see it. There's a think tank rolling bag back here that it's a four-wheeler that I need to review. And I've been working on it now for 2 weeks. I just had surgery, so that put me back a little bit. But like, I've got to find time to finish it. Like, I promised them I would do it. So I have to find time to do it. And, you know, so now with kids, with, you know, a busy work schedule, with karate training I do twice a week, not now after surgery for a little bit, but, you know, that takes up time. So putting things out there in the world and holding that lightning rod gets a little bit trickier. Yeah. You know, I'm very happy where I am. Mind you, like, I am not planning on leaving Imagine anytime soon. Their work-life balance, like, they, Imagine is all about actually, like, you know, giving photographers back time in their lives. So, mm-hmm, they treat employees the same way. Like, I am not supposed to be working nights and weekends. Like, I'm supposed to be off.
Right.
So, I am very happy. Like, the people are fantastic. So, like, things are going so well. I feel lucky. I feel happy. So I can't complain at all right now. I feel very fortunate. Nice. With between, you know, health and the kids are healthy and my wife is healthy. So yeah, I mean, things are good.
Yeah. You mentioned time and finding time. And I feel, yeah, like often when my mental health takes a turn for the worse, it's usually because I get really pushed on time. And, yep, you know, I'm always kind of the opinion that you can always, like, everything else is fixable, but time, you know, you're time traveling at 1 second per second at all times. And it's very hard to make more time. And so a lot of the kind of prioritization and knowing what's important, the way that often shows up is in calendars and in time. And often, you know, for me, that shows up in conflicting ways, right? There's three extremely exciting things I want to do. And there's only time to do one of them, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. How do you know what to say yes to or what to lean into?
You want to talk life or work?
I think life.
Life. Okay. So, in life, it's basically like, again, it comes back to my priorities, which is, I want to make sure that my kids are happy, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's somebody saying, hey, Scott, can you go on this photo trip with us, which has come up, and I'd love to go travel more places in the U.S. in the U.S. that I haven't been yet or anywhere else. If it's conflicting with my son's first basketball game or my daughter's dance recital or a birthday or a family trip, right? I am not missing those. I'm prioritizing them first above everything else. If it's you know, Scott, here's a way for you to make an extra $500 just by coming to I get photo leads for my photography. You know, it's a part-time photography business. I don't do it my professional photography full time. And if I get leads come in and I have to say no, if it's mm-hmm. conflicting with in some way, shape or form, or if it just, the job just doesn't feel right. Right. I'll say no. And mm-hmm. I will actually take the steps of referring it to another photographer that I know who I most likely would take the job. But because I have the fortune of having a good full-time job, my wife has, that I don't need the extra money right now. Mm-hmm. So I will literally prioritize them and my gut over just taking things on and adding it to the calendar.
Yeah. Before we started recording, we talked briefly about it's pretty rare to talk big questions and big topics. And I was curious, do you have a history of sitting with or talking about or looking into what is the meaning of life type of thing?
Never. So this is a first. We're going deep.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you are you spiritual? Are you religious? Does any of that play into your universe on that front?
So I am Jewish background. I am not a very religious person. We do Passover dinner and things like that, but it's more traditional family traditions rather than religions and spiritual.
Mm-hmm. So kind of socially Jewish rather than religiously Jewish kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've had my bar mitzvah, but I've always had a view, especially because of things I've experienced and witnessed as a child in temples and churches. Mm-hmm. I have always had a view on religion in a very unpopular way, where mm-hmm. I look at it more like it's a business than anything else. So I keep with traditions, which I just got Fiddler on the Roof stuck in my head. And
I mean, the tradition is tradition.
It is. But yeah.
So it sounds like it doesn't really play into your meaning of life.
Not so much. No.
Do you know what does? Do you feel there is something that we've mentioned your kids, but is there something that gives real purpose, real drive? Or if it's missing, that you feel something is missing?
No, I think helping people mm-hmm. is one of the things that drives me. Is I really enjoy helping people. And maybe it is not I said earlier, empowering photographers. Maybe it's not empowering photographers, but empowering people. Mm-hmm. I love helping people.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
Well, and this is an interesting thing, right? I think you're touching on something really important there. Mm-hmm. I very recently did a photo shoot, the first photo shoot I've done in a long, long, long time, at a women's retreat. And it was I was do you really want me to come here and do that? Because I'm clearly not a woman and it's going to add a very different energy to the space, right? And the lady who ran it was yeah, I want you there because I've seen you do other photo shoots and you're really good at capturing people. And those sessions turned out to be they'd been spending all weekend working on things like body image and, how to show up in the world and the challenges of being a woman in a world that is very male dominated. And so at the end of that, for me to show up with my camera was, it was pretty jarring, I think. And I got to show up with my full sparkly self and my camera. And I think what you just said about, are you helping photographers or are you helping people? And your mode of doing that happens to be your biggest strength, which is photography. But I think that extra layer is actually really interesting. I imagine from what you're saying there that you have a whole bunch of experiences where you helping people with photography actually wasn't really about the photography.
Oh yeah. I mean, some of it is also not even photography. Somebody saying, "Hey, I need to move this from here to here." Right? I'm not a mover. I'm strong. I'm not mover strong.
Right.
But I'm happy to help and I'll go and I'll break my back and help, right? Because I want to make sure I help help people. Or something like our karate school, right? Like it's not a chain. It's a very traditional martial arts school with history going back to the 70s. And the website is also very traditional in a way of like, it's not being all markety. Mm-hmm. Right. To use that term, it's very much like, here's the curriculum that we teach, and here's this, and here's our, you know, high ranks and stuff like that. So they needed help with the website. So I was like, I'll take it over. I can do it. Mm-hmm. So I literally took over the website and built the trust to the point where the board of directors for the karate school gave me the domain name. Like I legally own the domain name.
Right.
And host the website.
Please look after this.
Yeah. So like, you know, and I'm not charging, like hosting is expensive. I'm not charging them for it. I'm just doing it because I want to help. I love it. I want to help. So I'm doing it. You know, there's instances where it's not photography. It's just me just wanting to help people where I can. But yes, I do think at the same time, probably a lot of the photography stuff goes beyond just photography. You know, the podcast I'm doing, the live streams, it's not even like, here's how to shoot this. It's
right.
Okay. What's going on in your business that we can talk about?
Yeah.
You know,
and you're a second queue
in the karate. So I am. I am a brown belt. Mm-hmm. And I am two stripes away from black belt. Second queue.
Yeah. I've done a bunch of martial arts, judo, jiu-jitsu, various other bits and pieces. And I also found that the most interesting martial arts schools with a Japanese tradition can actually be really spiritual.
Yeah. So
have you found that?
Yeah. So when you talk spiritual, that definitely, so that's what came to my mind first.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, then I'm thinking religion as well. But yes, it's interesting when you go to train, especially in a traditional school, everything comes down to the spirit that you have to get through things. Your discipline, of course, to follow instructions and whatnot. But it is definitely a type of thing where you go in there, you cannot think about anything else but what is happening in that moment. If you do think about something else, it's obvious because you wind up screwing up.
Yeah.
Our tests that we do are accumulative. So we have our belts are white, green, purple, brown, black.
Mm-hmm.
We have things, we have katas or forms, right? We call them katas. And there's a lot of them, and each belt rank, each belt has its own number of katas. There's a mm-hmm. lot of katas. And then there's something that we call ippon. So these are choreographed fights, mm-hmm. 1-point choreographed fights. You know what's happening, but you have to know offense and defense. And I'm mm-hmm. telling you, there's about 60 some odd between offense and defense from white to brown. And they get progressively harder. And then in our test, you also have to fight for real. Once you're a green belt, white belts do not fight for real. And so when you are testing from white to green, you're doing white belt stuff, and that's it. When you get to green to purple, you're testing, you're now showing off white belt and green belts. And then again, you know, so when you're testing for a black belt, you're now doing straight through with no breaks, white belt, green belt, purple belt, brown belt, all the way through before you fight.
Means you're exhausted.
You're completely exhausted. So it's 100% spirit at that point. Do you have the spirit to keep going through this? Because physically, you might have trained cardio, but you are done.
Yeah.
Like you are done. And then, so you go to a Taekwondo school or something like that, right? And you do the board breaking. It's these thin little paper boards that you can like flick it with your finger and they'll break.
Right.
Our boards are half inch, I think they're half inch or they're 1 inch, I can't remember, pine, like solid boards that we have to break to get your black belt. You have to get through the entire test, fight, and then you have to break two of them back to back with no spacers. So in Taekwondo, not only are they thin boards, but they use spacers when it's back to back.
Right.
We are breaking two solid, thick boards back to back, no spacers.
you better have your technique right at that point.
Yes. So if you don't break them, you don't pass. You can get through everything. If you don't break those boards, you don't. So again, 100% spirit, because you have no energy in your punch. You're done. So everything we do is about spirit. My father-in-law is turning 71 in August. He just tested for his next stripe on his black belt at almost 71 and passed. He trained hard. He lost 25 pounds in order to test for this.
Goodness.
He knew he wanted to say to, in 2 months, he was like, I am losing weight. I want to get back to closer to 200 pounds so that it's easier for him to move on the floor. Right. It makes sense. And a lot of our choreographed fights have falling and rolling and things like that. So, better to get in better shape. He did. He lost 25 pounds, did mock tests once a week in class for 2 months, got through it, no problem. Day of the test, you could see and hear he was more exhausted because day of a test, the pressure's on.
Mm-hmm.
And he got through it. And it was, again, 100% spirit. So that was a long way to get it, to talk about that, but yes.
Yeah, but that feels like real, like, we talked about goals and accomplishments and, you know, I feel like this is a real commitment that you make, right?
Yes.
I mean, in day-to-day life, we rarely get to be pushed to that place. But choosing a sport or choosing a hobby where you are on the regular, whenever you do a grading, get pushed to the very edges of your being, I think that is obviously that's a choice, right?
Yeah.
But that's a choice not a lot of people make.
It definitely impacts things. I mean, you know, it teaches you to stand up for yourself, even like in work, right?
Mm-hmm.
It'll teach you to stand up for yourself, to make yourself known that, hey, this is my opinion, here is why, and this is why I think it's so important. That training in martial arts definitely has made me a better employee, for sure. I think it makes me more confident as a father, not only from knowing that I can defend my family if I have to,
right?
But just, you have that confidence, it makes you stand a certain way. It makes you feel like, hey, I'm a good person. Like, I am strong and I can handle whatever comes my way, right?
Yeah.
So 100%, it impacts the personal life, but it impacts everybody in a different way, right? I mean, we have in our dojo, we have two higher ranking people that are both attorneys. And both of them attribute their success. One's a defense attorney. And they both attribute their success to all the hard work and training they did through our organization.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. And I think this speaks to where we started this conversation, right? Every building block of your career builds on top of each other. And like, it turns out almost all skills are transferable. So what you learn on the mat, what you learn in a boardroom, what you learn raising your kids, it all interconnects in really beautiful ways, I think. I love that. We're coming up on time. I've got a couple of rapid fire ones that are interesting. What do you think happens when you die?
So
let's keep it light, you know?
Yeah, I've always thought about this, actually. This is something I've thought about ever since I was little. I've had the misfortune that two family members have passed away on my birthday, or like pretty close to my birthday. One was on my birthday when I was little. And the other was pretty close to it. And more recently, my grandmother passed away like 2 days before my birthday. Actually, it's coming up a year pretty soon.
So it's your birthday soon is what you're saying?
My birthday is very soon, yeah.
Does that give you like a feeling of worry at this point?
No.
Okay, good. It doesn't. I don't want to plant that seed. But who's next?
yeah, exactly. But like, so in the Jewish tradition, there's you get a headstone. It's like a low, it's not a tall, you know, grave, headstone. It's very low to the ground. And when it's done and put in place, they cover it. And then you have what's called an unveiling. So that's actually coming up very soon, about a month. But anyway, so I've always wondered this because of that. I think that impacted why I think about this often. And I think that when you die, that's it. Like, you're gone, right? Nothing happens. But what I'm hoping happens is that there is some sort of spiritual awareness of overlooking and being where you want to be. And it's a weird, it's one of those things that's hard to describe. Like, I am hoping that my grandmother is here sitting next to me right now and I can't see her. Most likely she's not, but I'm hoping she is. And I'm hoping that's what happens when I die eventually, that I am near my kids and near my grandkids or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, and in one sense, I hope that for you too. And in one sense, it doesn't actually matter. If you feel that your grandma might be with you, she is with you. Like, it's kind of one of those wonderful self-fulfilling, like, it just happens because you are open to the possibility that it's true. Mm-hmm. Then for all intents and purposes, it is true. You can draw strength from that and you can feel like somebody's there watching you or watching with you, watching over you.
One of the reasons why I think it might be the case, and this is, you know, this is definitely on point with this podcast, is when I was 17, in New Jersey, you can't get your driver's license until you're 17. When I was 17, I got my driver's license. My parents bought me a used car. It actually needed to be fixed. It was in the shop. So I borrowed my mom's car. At the time, my mom was leasing an Infiniti of some sort, whatever was brand new at the time. And it's a very nice car that I drove for maybe the second time ever. And I was driving home, and there's a park at the top of the street where we lived. And I was driving home on our street, and this older gentleman T-boned me in my mom's car. And it pushed me full speed into a tree. And then the car must have gone into reverse somehow. I mean, I was gone. I was like oblivious at this point. All the airbags deployed and stuff like that. It reversed. I went into the park and wound up stopping. I don't know if I pulled the emergency brake or whatever, but I stopped. Seatbelt was stuck. Door, like, literally got me in the driver's side door. I couldn't get out. Something opened the driver's side door and unbuckled the seatbelt. Wasn't me, but something did. And at that point in my life, the only person that died that was close to me that I knew of was my biological father. He died when I was 2. So I like to think that my father was there and he's like, I got to get my son out of this car. And he got me out of the car.
Damn.
Needless to say, it was a bad accident. And the car was totaled. The mechanic who wound up, you know, towing the car away to his shop was like, he knew my car because he was one fixing my car at the time. He's like, if you were in your car, you'd be dead. 100%. Like, your car could not have handled that. So my mom, again, there's always a reason for something. My mom had this brand new Infiniti with like the best in the world, like airbags and safety stuff at the time. And it saved me. And something got me out of that car when I couldn't. Nobody was around.
Yeah, and I feel like having a sense that something or someone is watching over you is reassuring, right? It's like, if you are stretched, again, it's that spirit thing. If you're stretched to the edges of your spirit, maybe there are other spirits that are like, hey, we got this. That's wonderful. Final question. Do you have a mantra or guiding principle that helps you when the going gets really tough? Like, something that you keep coming back to?
I think this comes back to my martial arts training, is like, what do you have that you can give it? Don't give up. Like, it's not, there's no quote there. It's just, you know, that's what we tell ourselves when we're going through this, is like, do you have what it takes to keep going? No matter what, give it everything you have. So I think that's something that I've learned. I mean, I've been doing the karate now for about 6 years. The pandemic threw me back, you know, from my progression. Otherwise, I'd probably be a black belt already. But I think that over the years has definitely impacted me. It's played a role in everything I do, whether it's, you know, in life, in work, whatever it is that keeps me going, that gives me that, like, hey, if I can do it in the dojo, I can do it anywhere. I just got to give it everything I have.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for talking to me about a big and strange topic.
thank you for this awesome conversation. It's nice to be able to dive into stuff that you don't talk about normally on a day-to-day.